Today's Monday, the 14th of January. Let's begin together in prayer with the Canticle of the Three Children. Highly appropriate, with many of us snowed under. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Bless the Lord, all you works of the Lord. Praise and exalt Him above all forever. Angels of the Lord, bless the Lord. You heavens, bless the Lord. All you waters above the heavens, bless the Lord. All you hosts of the Lord, bless the Lord. Sun and moon, bless the Lord. Stars of heaven, bless the Lord. Every shower and dew, bless the Lord. All you winds, bless the Lord. Fire and heat, bless the Lord. Cold and chill, bless the Lord. Dew and rain, bless the Lord. Frost and chill, bless the Lord. Ice and snow, bless the Lord. Nights and days, bless the Lord. Light and darkness, bless the Lord. Lightnings and clouds, bless the Lord. Let the earth bless the Lord. Praise and exalt Him above all forever. Amen. Bear in mind, that was prayed from inside of a fiery furnace, and, well, a lot of us have, at least the furnace is going in our house, hopefully not fiery today. As we continue on the Sunrise Morning Show on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, I'm Matt Swaim. Anna Mitchell's got news, Paul Lockman's pushing buttons, and up this hour, we'll first get the news, then take a look at This Week in Catholic History with Kevin Schmiesing. We're celebrating the anniversary of the death of Bishop Frederick Barriga, the snowshoe priest. Stephanie Mann will be along as we anticipate John Henry Newman's canonization this spring. We'll look at Newman's Anglican years with Stephanie. Danielle Bean continues her series on women of the Old Testament with us today, looking at the widow at Zarephath. And Bear Wozniak will be along. He's been going through the life and ministry of St. Paul. Today we're going to look at the time that St. Paul raised a dead guy. So, lots to get to on a Monday morning. Right now it's 2 minutes past. Here's Anna Mitchell with news.
Good morning. The longest government shutdown in U.S. history is now on day 24, and there are still no signs of it ending. The House and Senate are due to return to work today, but snow in Washington could keep some lawmakers away from the Capitol. Even if they are able to come in, neither the House nor the Senate is scheduled to vote on any measures to reopen the government. About a fourth of the federal government is shut down, and some 800,000 workers are either furloughed or having to work but not getting paid. There are no meetings between President Trump and Democratic leaders scheduled. President Trump is downplaying a New York Times report that claims the FBI opened up an investigation into him after he fired former FBI Director James Comey. In a Fox News interview over the weekend, Trump again called it a witch hunt and said he never colluded with Russia.
I'm going through all of this nonsense. It's all nonsense. But I have to be careful because these are dirty players. They're no good.
President Trump also says he's willing to share exactly what was said in his face-to-face meetings with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
And it was a great conversation. I'm not keeping anything under wraps. I couldn't care less. I mean, it's so ridiculous. These people make it up.
That comment was in response to the Washington Post reporting that Trump has gone to unusual steps to keep details from his five meetings with Putin from even his own administration. In the story, they claim he even took the personal notes of a translator with instructions not to discuss the meeting with anyone. Trump said that his meetings with Putin are no different than other world leaders. Pope Francis yesterday celebrated Mass and baptized 27 babies in the Sistine Chapel for the Feast of the Baptism of the Lord. In his homily, the Pope told parents that it is in the home that children will witness the faith. He said, quote, "You have asked the Church for faith for your children, and today they will receive the Holy Spirit and the gift of faith in each one's heart and soul." But, he said, this faith must be developed. It must grow. He said parents must transmit the faith through their words and actions, and by teaching their children to make the sign of the cross. And he said another piece of advice is to never fight in front of your children. He prayed that children may see Jesus through their parents' married love and through peace within the family home. In his Angelus address yesterday on the Feast of the Baptism of the Lord, Pope Francis encouraged the faithful to remember and celebrate their baptismal anniversary. From Vatican Radio, Devin Watkins reports.
The Holy Father had a seemingly simple question for everyone present.
Chi di voi conosce la data del battesimo?
Which of you knows the date of your baptism, he asked. He invited everyone who doesn't to find out from their parents, grandparents, or godparents, and to celebrate that date every year. The Pope's invitation came as the Church celebrates the solemnity of the baptism of our Lord. Pope Francis went on to reflect on Jesus' baptism in the Jordan, saying the readings at Mass point to a twofold immersion. First, he said Jesus was immersed in the crowd.
Si unisce ad essa, assumendo pienamente la condizione umana.
He unites himself to them, he said, thus completely assuming the human condition, sharing everything with us except sin. The Pope said Jesus' baptism in the Jordan is also an epiphany because it takes place in the midst of the penitent people. Pope Francis said Jesus was also immersed in prayer, that is, in communion with the Father. He said Jesus' mission of manifesting God's love for humanity begins with his baptism.
Tale missione è compiuta in costante e perfetta unione con il Padre e con lo Spirito Santo.
Such a mission is accomplished through constant and perfect union with the Father and with the Holy Spirit, the Pope said. In conclusion, Pope Francis said the baptism of the Lord is an opportunity to renew our own baptismal promises. He invited us all to commit ourselves to living daily in a manner consistent with our baptism. I'm Devin Watkins.
And four teams are left in the NFL playoffs following the divisional round. The top-seeded New Orleans Saints will host the Los Angeles Rams in the NFC Championship game on Sunday. The New England Patriots are set to play in their eighth straight AFC Championship game as they visit the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday. The winners of the conference championship games will advance to Super Bowl 53 on February 3rd in Atlanta. And for the record, the Saints beat the Eagles and the Patriots beat the Chargers yesterday, and on Saturday the Chiefs defeated the Colts and the Rams beat the Cowboys. Now, I think, Matt, and Paul Lockman will correct me if I'm wrong, I was 4 for 4 in my, he's giving me a thumbs up. I was 4 for 4 in my predictions on that.
I just want to take us back to Friday morning right around this time.
When you were, well, I mean, you didn't make any predictions.
I didn't make any predictions because, as you know, whatever I say, the opposite happens. I'm not superstitious. It's just that I'm a very bad prognosticator.
Well, we don't want anybody getting suspicious.
But now I've decided, Anna Mitchell,
because of you,
I've decided that I'm not even going to think anything quietly in the private chambers of my own heart. Because what I didn't say, but what I would have said on Friday morning around
this
time is,
you would have picked the Eagles. I'm sure of that.
No, I said, I don't care what this is what I said to myself, just to myself. I didn't even say it to Paul Lockman. I don't care what happens. I just hope the Chargers win.
Oh, I know. Poor Philip Rivers.
Who suffered the most crushing defeat of the weekend?
Well, I don't know. Maybe the Chargers, but maybe the Colts. So,
yeah, the Colts just never got anything going.
Yeah. I mean, the Chargers at least looked pretty good at the beginning of the game.
Went into halftime down like 35-7.
But they you know, came back. They had a respectable score.
Yeah, after
they had a respectable score.
I don't know. I can't say anything beyond that because then my worst possible scenario will actually play out if I say any more or think any more. I'm just going to watch some college basketball, I think, and some hockey and be done with it.
Yeah. Okay. I don't believe you, but okay.
Yes.
You're going to watch all football next weekend.
You're right to
I
not
know
believe
it.
Me. It's 9 minutes past the hour. Each week we kick things off by taking a look at This Week in Catholic History with Kevin Schmiesing, who teaches at the Athenaeum of Ohio, also a fellow with the Acton Institute. Good morning.
Good morning, Matt.
So let's start with a guy who gave us pretty much the printed word as we know it today.
Yeah, that's right. It's been said, Matt, that his invention led to the Reformation, the Enlightenment, the Scientific Revolution, and other things. So it was a big deal. His name, Johannes Gutenberg, he invented movable type. And the date we're looking at is January 18th, 1465. And this may seem a little bit strange. The date is his appointment by the Archbishop of Mainz to a political position. And I choose this date for two reasons. One, there's the church connection, but also because we actually don't know that many specific dates associated with his life. He enjoyed some success and some notoriety during his lifetime, but the enormity of his contribution to the technology of printed type actually wasn't fully appreciated until after his death. We don't know, for example, the exact date of his birth. Maybe June of 1400. He was born in the city of Mainz in western Germany, baptized in St. Christopher's Church there. At the time, Mainz was an important city-state. It was ruled over by the archbishop, so he had not only a church position, but was also the political ruler of Mainz, and as such, the archdiocese ran a mint. It coined its own money, and it was in this mint that Johannes Gutenberg had his start learning the skill of metalworking. We don't know many of his movements or activities over the next few years. By the 1430s, he was in Strasbourg, and probably it's there that he developed his idea of movable type. Now, there was movable type in the world already. The Chinese had had it for some time, but their method was somewhat cumbersome, using wooden blocks, and Gutenberg's great contribution was to apply metal tools to this process. By 1448, he was back in the city of Mainz. He set up a printing press, printed a number of publications, including some for the church, and most famously, in 1455, his Bible, which was printed maybe 150 to 200 copies. On January 18, 1465, he was appointed as a gentleman of the court in recognition of his contributions by the Archbishop of Mainz, and this gave him an income for the remaining few years of his life. He died in 1468, was buried in the cemetery attached to the Franciscan Church in Mainz. If you happen to have, there are still 22 complete copies of the Gutenberg Bible in existence. If you happen to have one of those, you probably want to keep it in a safe place. Johannes Gutenberg, appointed by the church this week in 1465.
And our friends who listen in Michigan to Berega Catholic Radio will be very familiar with the next guy.
A great American missionary, Frederick Berega, he died in Marquette, Michigan this week in 1868. He was born in what is now Slovenia in 1797. He studied law at the University of Vienna, and it was there that he came into contact with St. Clement Mary Hofbauer, who served as his spiritual director for a time. Berega discerned a vocation, and in 1823 he was ordained a priest for the Diocese of Ljubljana in Slovenia. But he didn't stay there very long, because in 1831 he heeded a call from Cincinnati, Ohio, actually. Bishop John Purcell needed priests to serve his sprawling diocese, which at that point covered much of the Northwest Territory. And so Frederick Berega came to Cincinnati in 1831. He at first served the German-speaking population of the area, but then he went to be a missionary among the Native Americans, in particular in Michigan and Wisconsin. He worked among the Ottawas and Ojibwas, learned those languages, established a mission in what is now the city of Grand Rapids in Michigan. There's a statue of him outside the cathedral there. Because of his mode of travel across these northern reaches of the United States, he became known as the Snowshoe Priest. When the Diocese of Sault Ste. Marie in Michigan, which is now the Diocese of Marquette, was created in 1853, Frederick Berega became its first bishop. He served in that capacity until his death, which happened this week, January 19, 1868. His cause for canonization has been introduced, so he is Venerable Frederick Berega, and maybe someday this date will be his feast day. This week, January 19, 1868.
All right. Thank you so much for a great look at This Week in Catholic History, Kevin Schmiesing. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Matt.
And I want to say, by the way, since we're talking about Bishop Frederick Berega, Anna Mitchell, the Snowshoe Priest, I want to say good morning to all the people listening on the 7 stations in the Berega Radio Network, many of them in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And if you go, Anna Mitchell, to beregaradio.com, that's B-A-R-A-G-A radio.com, and I did this morning. Up in the top right corner of the page, you'll see a little oval image of the Snowshoe Priest himself. And there's a thing that says 456 prayers for sainthood. When I went to this morning, it said 455 prayers for sainthood. You click on that, it pulls up a little canonization prayer. You can pray it, and then you can put in your name.
Cool.
And then you hit enter, and then it goes up one.
Oh, very neat.
So I did that this morning. And At any rate, I have no idea. It would be cool if we could get it to 500 by the show's end, so if everybody would just go to BarragerRadio.com.
44 more people to go to BarragerRadio.com.
It can happen.
Let's do it.
A lot of people are like brushing their teeth and stuff, but you can go run over to the computer real quick. Or the phone. BarragerRadio.com.
Love it.
Check it out. As we check on weather for the nation, Mother Nature will give much of the country a break from Old Man Winter today. Just had a picture in my head. Mother Nature and Old Man Winter. I'm going to let you off the hook, buddy. Sunglasses will be needed from the northwest coast to the east coast thanks to a pair of high-pressure centers governing the weather. The interior part of the U.S. will see a range of 40s and 50s in the southern plains to the 20s and 30s in the mountain west, northern plains, upper Midwest, Great Lakes, Mid-Atlantic, and northeast. Low pressure will greet the California coast today. Interstate 5 from San Francisco to San Diego will see showers, and the rain could be heavy enough to trigger localized flooding. In the colder mountains outside of L.A. and San Diego, snow will be a problem. It's quarter past on the Sunrise Morning Show. We got headlines right after this.
Central Fabricators is proud to support the Sunrise Morning Show and encourages other Catholic business owners to do the same. Central Fabricators knows that the Sunrise Morning Show is where you'll get the news from the Catholic perspective while keeping you up to date on what's happening in the Vatican as well. It's also a great way to keep in touch with the Catholic faith throughout the week. Central Fabricators, based in Cincinnati, Ohio, has been in business for more than 70 years. On the web at centralfabricators.com. That's centralfabricators.com.
I'm Matt Swain, grateful that Visiting Angels underwrites the Sunrise Morning Show. People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide to continue living at home rather than a nursing home. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. And services are provided up to 24 hours per day with caregiver selection before service begins. Visiting Angels. Online at visitingangels.com. That's visitingangels.com.
Support for the Sunrise Morning Show is from J.J. White Incorporated, the single-source multi-trade contractor for your next construction project. Since 1920, J.J. White Incorporated has been constructing with knowledge and providing service with integrity and safety. From heavy industrial to commercial projects, J.J. White does it all. With offices in Philadelphia, South Bend, Whiting, Newcastle, and Boston, you can count on excellent construction service and quality. J.J. White Incorporated, 215-722-1000, and online at jjwhiteinc.com.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare, and MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is around $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 855-25-SHARE. That's 855-25-SHARE. 855-25-SHARE.
The EWTN home video highlight for January is Mother Cabrini. Through opposition and tremendous hardship, she alleviated the suffering of thousands of poor families. The courage and enormous faith of this great saint is an inspiration to us all. Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
19 minutes past the hour. Here's Anna Mitchell with headlines.
There are no meetings scheduled between congressional Democrats and President Trump today as the longest partial government shutdown in U.S. history continues. Pope Francis yesterday celebrated Mass and baptized 27 babies in the Sistine Chapel for the Feast of the Baptism of the Lord. And the European Court of Human Rights has unanimously rejected the claims of German homeschooling parents who say their parental rights were violated by compulsory school attendance laws.
You'd be following that one.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight on The Journey Home, Anna Mitchell.
Who?
You want to guess? Actually, I've told you this, but... There's no possible way for you to guess because the world is loaded with great converts. But this is somebody from the EWTN radio family that's going to be on tonight.
Oh, is it Dr. David Anders?
It's Dr. David Anders.
Oh, man. This is one not to be missed.
So he's been on before several years ago. Actually, a couple times several years ago since he's been on. He hasn't been on since Called to Communion has been a radio show.
He hasn't been on since Called to Communion.
The Catholic Church Saved My Marriage.
Oh, man. He's got a lot to update.
So we got a lot to cover with Dr. David Anders. And I'll just say that as someone who, you know, settled him in at his hotel, got him to the airport, got him back to the airport and everything.
Is he the one you missed, like, your... Oh, no, you were talking about Scott Hahn. You missed your exit talk, getting so engrossed
in
the conversation.
But it was basically like I got, like, 8 extra hours of my own personal Call to Communion just talking to the guy.
That's so cool. I'm jealous.
He's like a supercomputer disguised as a human. He's amazing.
I mean, come on. Do you ever listen to his show?
Yes.
Nice, man. Puts us to shame.
Yes. 8 p.m. Eastern. Catch Dr. David Anders on The Journey Home. It's 21 past.
Sacred Heart Radio's 7-day challenge is when you ask everyone you know to put us on one of their car radio presets and listen for 7 days. To start Sacred Heart Radio's 7-day challenge, they've got to lock on to 740 AM, 89.5 FM, or 910 AM.
Support for Sacred Heart Radio is from Agent Bob Parsons with Allstate Insurance, who has over 30 years' experience protecting families with auto, home, life insurance, and much more. 859-341-2662. That's 859-341-2662.
I'm Father Rob Jack. Join me this afternoon for Driving Home the Faith when Dr. Teresa Burke will talk about Rachel's Vineyard, a ministry to post-abortive women. Bob Wurzerbacher will pass on the pro-life news in the Archdiocese. I'll reflect on faith and the family, plus news, traffic, and weather to get you home safely. That's this afternoon beginning at 4 on Sacred Heart Radio.
You're on the road to Christ the King. Driving home the faith.
God creates life. Adoption protects life from abortion.
This is Ohio State Representative Tom Brinkman. Please come to the annual Pro-Life Rosary Procession.
Pray in reparation for the slaughter of babies and for their mothers and fathers.
The annual Pro-Life Rosary Procession and Rally in downtown Cincinnati at City Hall is Saturday, January 19th at 11 a.m. Take the shuttle from Fountain Square Garage to City Hall after 10 a.m. Stay for the Fountain Square Rally at noon. More information at cincinnatiprolife.org. Are you looking for a new way to get family, friends, and fellow parishioners to try Sacred Heart Radio in the new year? Have them take the 7-day challenge by putting Sacred Heart Radio on a preset and listening for 7 days. We know that once they hear how engaging, thought-provoking, and inspiring Sacred Heart Radio is, they'll keep us on for 7 times 70 days and more. So ask them to take the 7-day challenge, and then, God willing, they'll want to load 3 presets with Sacred Heart Radio for 740 AM, 89.5 FM, and 910 AM.
We are in the year 2019. It is speculated that around Easter will be the time that John Henry Newman will go from being Blessed John Henry Newman to Saint John Henry Newman, a new miracle approved for his canonization. And as we approach that event, we've got one of our favorite experts on English Catholic history, Stephanie Mann, to take a look at the life and thought of John Henry Newman in a series leading up to the canonization. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning, Matt.
Of course, people familiar with your book, Supremacy and Survival, How Catholics Endured the English Reformation. And I guess the best way to kick this off is to kind of get a sense of who Newman was. We all know him now as this convert and great mind in the English Catholic tradition, but there were 44 years of his life leading up to that.
That's right. He was born and raised in an Anglican family, and therefore he was part of, I should say, kind of the English establishment, and that was one of the reasons why his conversion was such a shock. But there's also a great deal of continuity, and his life is kind of divided in these two halves, one Anglican, one Catholic, but there's a great deal of continuity because he was always dealing with some of the same themes and issues throughout his life. But one of the most important things that happened to him, even before he went to Oxford and started getting involved in the Oxford movement, was that when he was a young man off to school, he had a substantial conversion. I mean, again, he was baptized, he was raised in the Church of England, he attended services, you know, prayed according to the Book of Common Prayer. But he had a realization when he was still a boy that God was real and he was real. And in some ways, that those were the two guidepost he had in life was that God was true. He himself was true. He was a person, and he was a reality, and that those realities needed to fit together. Therefore, he took as a motto that holiness was the aim of life, and that he should always strive to be holy. And he was also convinced that religion and loving God and worshiping God meant that you knew the truth, and that you knew that Christianity was a doctrinal religion. There were truths, and they were to be defended, and they were to be believed. And that is throughout his life, that because of that conversion as a young man.
And because of that, I mean, the reason that his eventual conversion sent so many shockwaves throughout the English-speaking world, not just in England, is because that commitment to truth made him a pretty strong leader in academic circles within Anglicanism. I mean, he was a seriously respected Anglican for the way that he articulated all these things.
Yes, exactly. And it also showed a pattern in his life where he, if he saw an issue or an event that indicated that someone was not following the truth, he would speak out. For instance, when there was a possibility of a man being appointed to a position who had denied that baptism is a sacrament and that there's a true healing of the wound of original sin, and just thought baptism was just kind of symbol, he took action. He says, "You can't make that man a preacher and someone who will teach on Christian doctrine if he doesn't believe that baptism it regenerates the soul and unites us with God and brings the faith, hope, and charity and the life of God into the person. Why would you allow that person to preach and to teach what the Christian faith is?" So it also set him out on this pattern of I guess you'd say speaking truth even when it was inconvenient, and even when he would sometimes fail. That person was named to the position, and Newman went on. But he was always standing up for the truth.
Yeah, and as we see, it not only was inconvenient to him, you know, in those first 44 years of his life, it would become extremely inconvenient to him to say some of those things later on as he went into his first years, especially as a Catholic priest and then a cardinal. But let's just, you know, since we're focusing on the earlier part of his life, I mean, we think of him now as the guy who wrote The Idea of the University and an essay on the development of doctrine and Apologia Pro Vita Sua and all these other just massive works that have influenced popes and saints since. But let's just talk about if he were to put together a resume, a curriculum vitae at age like 40, what all would be on there?
Well, quite a bit, because he had already started on his, when he was at Oxford, he started on the pattern of studying the fathers of the church, so he wrote a book on the Arians of the 4th century, in which he described the battle between Saint Athanasius against the world, and the Arians and the true doctrine of the faith. He was very well known as a preacher, as the vicar of the University Church of St. Mary's in Oxford. His preaching and his homilies were very well known. In fact, that's what we'll spend a lot of our time after we sketch out his life, going through some of the themes that are present in his homiletics and his parochial and pastoral sermons. He began to think about justification. He wrote a book on the lectures of justification, and his probably what he would have put down as one of his main positions was he was a leader of the Tractarian movement, or it's also called the Oxford movement, writing tracts for the times. And this was an effort on his part and several others within the university to present the Anglican Church as a true church, as an apostolic, as being part of the one holy Catholic and apostolic church. And there were people within the Church of England who didn't like that because they thought they were Protestant. And he was trying to say, no, you're closer to Catholicism than you think. And that, in fact, will be part of what sends him on his way to the Catholic Church, because as he continues to study this, he's trying to build up a structure where the Anglican Church is equal to the Catholic Church and the Church of the East, the Orthodox Church, and as he tries to build up that structure, it turns out to be a house of cards for him, and he's tumbling down. But that wouldn't be immediately on his resume, but that's one of the issues he would have. And he was a great success as a founder of an Anglican minister and as a pastor of souls. He established a new church in a community south, a little bit south of Oxford. He was a very active and successful, in many ways, even though some of these his big causes would fail, a very successful member of the Anglican church. And that's, like you said, that's why it would be such a shock to Oxford and to England when he became a Catholic.
It is the Sunrise Morning Show. Thank you so much for being with us. And up next, we got news with Anna Mitchell. It's half past.
Good morning. 24 days and counting for the longest government shutdown in U.S. history. The House and Senate are scheduled to return to work today, but snow in Washington could keep some lawmakers away from the Capitol. Even if they are able to come in, neither the House nor the Senate is scheduled to vote on any measures to reopen the government. But Senator Lindsey Graham is pitching an idea that would have President Trump reopen the government on a temporary basis. Mike Bauer reports.
On day 24 of the partial government shutdown, there are signs the Republicans are increasingly concerned that the standoff is hurting their party politically. Lindsey Graham suggesting President Trump temporarily reopen the government while continuing negotiations. If talks don't bear any fruit, the president could consider following through on his threat to bypass Congress and build a border wall by declaring a national emergency. Over the weekend, part of Miami International Airport was closed because of a shortage of TSA agents, and Sunday evening, Houston Bush Airport stopped security screening at one of its terminals due to a shortage of staff. Mike Bauer, NBC News Radio.
President Trump is downplaying a New York Times report that claims the FBI opened up an investigation into him after he fired former FBI Director James Comey. In a Fox News interview with Jeanine Pirro over the weekend, Trump again called the whole thing a witch hunt and said he never colluded with Russia.
I'm going through all of this nonsense. It's all nonsense, but I have to be careful because these are dirty players. They're no good.
President Trump also said he's willing to share exactly what was said in his face-to-face meetings with Russian President Vladimir Putin, that in response to the Washington Post reporting that Trump has gone to unusual steps to keep details of his five meetings with Putin from even his own administration. A federal judge in California is blocking a Trump administration policy that would allow more companies to opt out of providing free birth control to female employees. California joined 12 other states and Washington, D.C. to stop the rule from taking effect Monday while a lawsuit against it moves forward. Judge Hayward Gilliam limited the ruling to just the 13 states involved in the lawsuit and did not block the rule from going into effect nationwide. The rule would allow more companies to cite religious and moral grounds from providing free birth control. Pope Francis yesterday celebrated Mass and baptized 27 babies in the Sistine Chapel for the Feast of the Baptism of the Lord. From Vatican Radio, Devin Watkins reports.
Speaking to parents in his homily, Pope Francis reflected on the parental duty of transmitting the faith to the next generation. You have asked the Church for faith for your children, he said, and today they will receive the Holy Spirit and the gift of faith in each one's heart and soul. But the Pope said this faith must be developed, it must grow.
Deve svilupparsi, deve crescere.
Before children study the faith in catechism class, he said, their parents must transmit it at home. He said this is because the faith is always transmitted in dialect, that is, the native language spoken in the environs of the home. Pope Francis said parents transmit the faith through their example and words, and by teaching their children to make the sign of the cross. He said the faith must be transmitted through parents' faith-filled lives so that children may see married love and peace within the family home.
Che vedano che Gesù è lì.
May they see Jesus there, he said. Then Pope Francis gave parents a word of advice.
Mai litigate davanti ai bambini. Mai.
Never fight in front of your children, he said. It's normal that parents should argue. The opposite would be strange. Do it, he urged, but without letting children hear or see. And he explained why he gave this advice.
Voi non sapete l'angoscia che riceve un bambino quando vede litigare i genitori.
You have no idea the anguish it causes a child to see his or her parents fight, the Holy Father noted. He said this was a word of advice that will help you to transmit the faith. I'm Devin Watkins.
And the European Court of Human Rights has unanimously rejected the claims of German homeschooling parents. The Catholic News Agency reports that the court said prevention of social isolation and ensuring integration in society were sufficient reasons for the state to intervene against parental authority. It's 35 past the hour. The
Support for Sacred Heart Radio is from Schneller Heating, Air, and Plumbing and owner Chris Knockelman. For heating, air conditioning, water heaters, plumbing, and more, Schneller has been treating customers with integrity for over 87 years. On the web at schnellerair.com.
Support for Sacred Heart Radio is from Kelsey Chevrolet, online at kelseychev.com. Introducing you to a Kelsey Chevrolet exclusive, lifetime powertrain protection.
We are Kelsey Chevrolet, Vermont. Family to yours.
When you need a landscaper, plumber, dentist, lawyer, realtor, doctor, insurance, or
a new car,
go to sacredheartradio.com and find the complete Angels list of underwriters. Let them know where you heard them, Sacred Heart Radio, and why you chose them. They share your faith and values because they will never know how much impact Sacred Heart Radio has on their business unless you tell them. And if you know someone who should be on the Angels list, email me their contact info, leah@sacredheartradio.com. And I'll take it from there.
It's 24 minutes before the hour on this Monday, January the 14th. And your forecast is brought to you on Sacred Heart Catholic Radio by SchnellerAir.com. The snow has moved out, but with cold temperatures and the possibility of some freezing drizzle in certain areas to the south, be careful of slick spots on the road this morning. Right now, temperatures in the upper 20s as you're heading out the door. For Cincinnati, mostly cloudy skies today with a high of 30 degrees, partly cloudy and frigid tonight with an overnight low of 17, partly cloudy tomorrow and still chilly with a high of 34 degrees. For the Miami Valley Dayton area, morning clouds, then partly sunny later today with a high of 32, partly cloudy and cold tonight with an overnight low of 16, and a mix of clouds and sun tomorrow for your Tuesday and a high of 35 degrees. This is Sacred Heart Catholic Radio. Back with us now on the Sunrise Morning Show is Danielle Bean. You can find her online at CatholicMom.com. Check out her Girlfriends podcast through Ascension Press or connect with her directly at DanielleBean.com. We've been going through her book, You Are Enough. Good morning, Danielle.
Good morning. How are you?
I am doing just fine. Always happy to be talking to you. And we're going to be talking about trust in the Lord today using one of my favorite stories of the Old Testament. And we'll get to that in a moment. But, you know, when we talk about trusting in the Lord, even when circumstances seem dire, I mean, why is it that these are often the times when we really just want to take matters into our own hands and not worry about what God thinks?
Right. I mean, isn't that the common temptation? That's the human reaction to these things, to feel like or to want to act like everything's on us, that we're in charge. But how ridiculous is that? First of all, we know it's not true. But second of all, we're not all powerful in the way that God is. So putting our trust in ourselves and our own capabilities and our own status and our own finances or our own skills or opportunities is ludicrous. And that, you know, I love that God, this is a common theme that we see that Jesus speaks to us about all throughout the New Testament, is this call to trust in him. And, you know, in Matthew chapter 6, he reminds us, and this is a passage I reflect on often, to be like the lilies of the field. Now, that's a tall order, right? Because we're not small and simple like that, but that's how he wants us to be. He wants us to trust in him and then be provided for the way that he provides for all of, even the smallest of his creatures. Yet, that's a really difficult thing for us to do.
It really is, but it is, of course, what we are called to do. And to illustrate this, I think there is no better story to uphold than that of the widow at Zarephath, who shows up in the first book of Kings. Can you tell us about her?
Yeah, so this is the one. It's going to be familiar to a lot of people, even if you don't know her by that name, that this widow woman was visited by the prophet Elijah, who came to her and asked her not only for a drink of water, but also for a little cake. And this is just, I laugh when I read this gospel, because this woman, but it's a very serious situation, this woman was preparing to make a last meal for herself and her son, because she had only a little flour left, only a little bit of oil left in her jar, and she had just enough to make one last small little flour cake for herself and her son. And she explains this to Elijah, that she's on her very last bits of food, that she was preparing to make this meal for herself and her son, and then she just matter-of-factly tells him, and then we're going to die, that this is all that she had. And, you know, I mean, as matter-of-fact as she is about it, it's a very dire situation, because, you know, widows in that time had no means of supporting themselves, and we assume her child was very young, and unable to support her. And so she honestly was, you know, that in that dire straits. And yet Elijah calls on her to share with him anyway, which she does obediently. He doesn't force her to do anything. I think that's really important to note here, that God doesn't force us. Sometimes I wish he would, because then I'd be more obedient. But he doesn't. He invites us to trust in him. He invites us to trust in his providence. He invites us to step out in faith, even when it's scary, even when we cannot see that there's a resolution to this problem. He invites us to trust in him that way. And the widow in this story does exactly that. She bakes that last cake. She brings it and shares it with Elijah. And then he stays with her for a few months, in fact, I think up to 6 months. And during that time, her jar of oil, which was empty, never runs dry. Her bin of flour never runs out. And I just love this story, because how many of us feel like sometimes we're on our last bit, we're running on fumes, I've got nothing left? And it's inside of those moments that God calls us to lean on him. God calls us to trust him, and then always does provide for us abundantly.
Yeah, I mean, it's not so likely that our pantries are so bare that we're going to die of starvation against our next, or, you know, after our next meal. But then I think of my own life, and like, as you say, you know, I'm running on fumes today, and it's like Roma or Tommy comes up to me and says, "That's okay that you're running on fumes. Just go ahead and focus on me and use the rest of those fumes. God's going to take care of it." I'm not sure that my reaction is so much like the widow at Zarephath with her flour and oil.
Right, I know, and I'm the same. You know, it's sometimes when you're at your very end of your energy or your attention and what you're able to give, that kids have a way of doing that. Family life has a way of doing that. Marriage has a way of doing that. It's asking you for just a little bit more, asking you to give of yourself just a little bit more when you think you have absolutely nothing. But when we respond in love, at least make that first step toward responding in love and trust in God's providence to give us grace to meet other people's needs, even when we feel like we have nothing left, that God does provide for us with abundance. He provides for us with great love. You know, I love that passage I mentioned in Matthew chapter 6, where he talks about the lilies of the field and how they're clothed in glory. He doesn't just provide for us. He wants to provide for us in extravagant ways, in glorious ways, in beautiful ways that we can't even imagine.
And how many times, Danielle, have you looked back in your own life and been able to see the Lord doing that, taking care of you, even when you struggled to realize that in the moment?
Absolutely. So hard. And I know so many times I have prayed, and I've learned over the years because of my own experience, to pray, "God, I don't see the answer to this. I know you have the answer to this." And just pray those words of trust in leaning into God, trusting that he does have the answer when we see no possible answer. But just reminding yourself that God can do the impossible, right? He said, "For man it's impossible, but for God all things are possible." And that includes whatever circumstance you might find yourself in, whatever seemingly impossible challenge you feel you might be facing, that God is there with you in it, and he's calling you closer to him to lean on him inside of that moment.
And one more thing about this widow at Zarephath, you know, something that I think any mother fears the most, right? That of having to give up a child, of losing a child. Tell us that story.
Right. So, you know, she doesn't just get asked for that, right? I mean, she gets asked to lean on God as she's preparing her last meal and thinking she's going to die. God asks her again to trust in her, in him, when her son, her one thing, you know, her one precious thing in her life is this son, this one blessing that she has. He suffers, we think it might be some kind of a seizure or something inside of the house while Elijah is staying there. She, of course, is panicked by this. But even inside of that moment, she goes to Elijah, trusts in God's prophet, and in that way trusts in God's providence to bring her son back to health. And through Elijah, God does accomplish that miracle. So it was asking, you know, this is the way that God works. He asks us for little things, and when we're faithful in those little things, he asks us for more. So think of the times in the Bible where you see the story of needing to give up your most precious thing, and that's what the widow responded so well to.
Yeah. It's such an incredible story. Thank you so much, Danielle Bean. Really encourage you to pick up a copy of her book, You Are Enough, which is linked through sunrisemorningshow.com. Matt, I love that story.
It's a great story.
It's such a good story.
And I love the first reading from Mass today. Yeah, for some reason, I feel like this one has come up in conversation a lot.
Really?
Lately, especially the first two verses of this, Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 through 6, is what we'll hear in the first reading for Mass. And I think it can be tempting, especially those of us who get into theological debate, to be like, well, Jesus gave us this and that information, and Jesus gave us this and that message. And, of course, there's also that wing of society that's like, well, Jesus was a good teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is Jesus is not a messenger. Jesus is the message.
Yeah.
He is the Word made flesh.
He is the full revelation of God.
Yeah, as the writer of Hebrews says so profoundly here, to kind of put it all in one sentence. Brothers and sisters, in times past, God spoke in partial and various ways to our ancestors through the prophets. In these last days, he spoke to us through the Son, whom he made heir of all things, and through whom he created the universe.
Yeah, this is an important thing to note, that we have all of revelation. God is not revealing anything new to us these days. We might have different ways of looking at it or different insights into the revelations. But, God sent his son. Like, God came to earth.
That is the message.
That is the message.
He is the message.
Amen. All right.
Well, up next, one of the preachers of the message, St. Paul, we've been discussing with Bear Wozniak. And up next, we're going to talk about an instance where St. Paul, through the power of God, brought a guy back to life. Stay with us. It's 14 minutes before the hour on the Sunrise Morning Show on EWTN.
Catholic Singles is proud to support the Sunrise Morning Show. If you're looking for someone who shares your faith and values, Catholic Singles is a great resource for bringing single Catholics together. Like Matt and Christine, who married a little over a year ago and have happily welcomed their first child. Founded by a Catholic single like yourself, Catholic Singles is committed to your needs as a Catholic by matching you with authentic Catholic principles, resources, and modern dating technologies. Let Catholic Singles help you find the perfect match on the web at catholicsingles.com/sunrise.
Did you happen to receive any gift cards in your Christmas stocking this year? If you'll be spending a gift from Amazon, please remember to click our Amazon link at sunrisemorningshow.com before you start shopping. That's because a portion of the purchase price comes back to the show as commission, whether you use a gift card or a credit card. But you've got to click that Amazon link first. Consider it a bonus gift to the Sunrise Morning Show. Again, when you go shopping, click the Amazon link prominently placed for your clicking convenience at the top of sunrisemorningshow.com.
The Catholic solution to the healthcare problem is here. Solidarity HealthShare is a healthcare sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund healthcare costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Solidarity HealthShare's members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act. For more information, 844-313-4999, 844-313-4999, or online at solidarityhealthshare.org. solidarityhealthshare.org.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to wreck?
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are
as far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
And don't forget that tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern, that same Dr. David Anders, who hosts Call to Communion on EWTN Radio, will be sharing his own personal conversion story with Marcus Grodi on The Journey Home. That's 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Television. It's 11 minutes before the hour. Here's Anna Mitchell with headlines.
24 days and counting now for the longest government shutdown in U.S. history, with still no end in sight. A federal judge in California is blocking a Trump administration policy in the 13 states challenging it. This would allow more companies to opt out of providing free birth control to employees. And Pope Francis yesterday celebrated Mass and baptized 27 babies in the Sistine Chapel for the Feast of the Baptism of the Lord.
News at the top and bottom of each hour every weekday morning on the Sunrise Morning Show. I'm Matt Swaim, joined now by Bear Wozniak. You know him from The Long Ride Home on EWTN Television and also perhaps his website, deepadventure.com. Good morning, Bear.
Aloha, Matt. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, so we've been going through the life of ministry of St. Paul. You're doing a St. Paul-themed pilgrimage this year. And I got to say that the episode from Paul's life that we're discussing today is of great encouragement to me, because it proves, Bear, that people even fell asleep during St. Paul's homilies.
Yeah, I was going to mention that too. I bet you have that happen a lot, Matt. But I always blame it on all the carbs they had at lunchtime when they come back for that 1 o'clock talk.
Oh, you know, boy. You've had that men's conference slot, haven't you, where you have to be the first speaker after lunch. You know what that's like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, we see here Paul is speaking, and there's a young man sitting way up on the third floor. And this is his last time to speak to the Ephesians before he leaves. And it's on the first day of the week, so it's Sunday, and they're celebrating the Eucharist, actually. And this is during the part where he's speaking from the Word. And he speaks and goes on and on and on and on, and the lamps are burning and the room is heating up, and it's up to midnight now, and there's a young man up on the third floor who falls soundly asleep, and actually falls and dies at Paul's steps, and Paul throws himself across the young man and prays for him, and he's raised from the dead. And this, it's just a picture of what Paul said: if I preach Jesus and he's not resurrected from the dead, then what a wretched man I am. That it's not that Jesus was such a great teacher or a great philosopher, but that Jesus died and was risen from the dead that gives us hope and is a reason for kind of that furious sort of intensity that you and I feel to share the gospel, that this is real. I remember when I first experienced Jesus Christ, when I first experienced the infusion of His Spirit, I was 19 years old and I was in college, and I thought everyone would want to know that they could know the God of the universe. Everyone would want to know that they can personally know our Creator. And I felt bad for anybody who sat at a cafeteria table at college who was sitting alone, because I would sit with them and I would lay it on them. But this is why the disciples were so thrilled and so excited about sharing the gospel, is that Jesus, in fact, wasn't just a great teacher, but he raised from the dead, and that God gives us that same resurrection power.
You know, there are so many things to talk about this in this passage, Bear, as you mentioned. And Marcus Grodi on the Journey Home is always talking to his guests about verses he never saw as a Presbyterian pastor. And there's one of those in here for me. So Eutychus is hearing what I, in my previous evangelical, you know, world, would have just thought was a very long sermon. You know, he just came out to hear a talk and he fell asleep and he passed out and died when he fell out the window. And then Paul picks him up and they're like, okay, all right, now that's over with. Let's all go have dinner. But that's not what happens here. Paul raises him from the dead through the power of Christ Jesus, the resurrection power of Christ, and then they would go upstairs again and break bread. Now, whenever the word break bread is in the New Testament, now I understand that that's a way of saying they have the Eucharist. So that puts this whole thing in the context, essentially, of a Mass. And I would have never seen anything like that. I would have never said to myself, well, this is all in the context of the Eucharist, and yet it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing when I read through it again, just like, this is one of those hidden passages. You know, they were doing the liturgy of the Word, Paul was preaching, and they were going to go into the liturgy of the Eucharist, but all of it is the Mass. But there's something else about this passage that I just, it just thrills me. Think about Peter when he raised Tabitha or Dorcas from the dead. You know, her name means gazelle. And there's this one scripture, there's this one book of the Bible that I just love. It's the Song of Solomon. And it reminds me of one of the verses in Song of Solomon, too, about the resurrection power and glory of Jesus and who we are meant to be. And in here she says, who is this? The sound of my lover. Here he comes, springing across the mountains, leaping across the hills. My love is like a gazelle or a young stag. See, he is standing behind our wall, gazing through the windows, peering through the lattice. My lover speaks and says to me, and this is what I think people need to hear right now, is this Jesus who's resurrected from the dead, leaping across the mountaintops in his resurrection glory, speaks to us in our point of need when we're fallen, when we're dead to life. He says, arise, my love, my lovely one, and come away with me. For the winter is past, and the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth. The time of the pruning of the vines has come, and the sound of the turtle doves is heard in the land. We're to be like Tabitha or Dorcas or Eutychus, whose name, by the way, it means fortunate one. We are the fortunate ones. We are the ones that Jesus is calling. And spring is coming early. With the gospel, like in the time of the Advent, you know, it's like spring comes early. And Jesus is calling each one of us to this intimate relationship with him and to run with him, to follow in his footsteps, to enjoy the power and love of God and to share the gospel with others.
Yeah, it's powerful stuff, and it's, you know, the engine of Christianity, right? We are an Easter people, and Alleluia is our song. And Bear, I know that you joked about, you know, putting people to sleep with our talking. I don't have that problem as much because it's my job to wake people up in the morning, although I do have to sometimes compete with the snooze bar. I know there are those out there who bring us on, you know, their clock radios turn us on first thing in the morning, and all they want to do is just hit snooze. I don't know what to do about them, Bear.
Well, invite people to come with us to Greece. Come to my website, davidmetcher.com, and they can join us in May to our follow in the footsteps of St. Paul. We're excited about it.
And Bear will not preach so long that you fall asleep and fall out of a window if you go on that pilgrimage with him. davidmetcher.com. Thanks so much, my friend. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Aloha. Bye-bye.
All right. That is the Sunrise Morning Show for our EWTN listening audience. Thank you so much for being with us. We got 2 full hours coming up for those of you listening on the Sunrise Morning Show app or on the Sacred Heart Radio network of stations. I'm Matt Swain. For all of our guests here, may God bless you and keep you and grant you his peace.